It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The State House and Senate wrapped up a rare mid-July session with the budget stalemate no closer to being resolved. So how is this impacting social service agencies and the people they serve? I'm joined now in studio by Stephen Christian Michaels. He's president and CEO of Family Services of Western Pennsylvania. Stephen Christian Michaels, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Oh, glad to be here.
Also with us, former state legislator Alan Kukovich. Alan Kukovich, good to have you with us.
Good to see you, Paul.
You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. If you're someone who has been adversely affected by the state budget impasse, if you're one of the folks who depends on these social services, we'd like to hear from you. 412-246-2002 is the number to call to ask a question or share a story with us. And Stephen Christian Michaels, Alan Kukovich, you held a gathering today to talk about some of these issues. What is beginning to happen to some of these social service agencies in Western Pennsylvania as a result of the budget impasse? Alan.
I think Stephen is more directly involved with each of those programs.
All right, let's go with Stephen Christian Michaels.
So we received our last check for the month of June, and we will then in August be not having a check sent to us. And this is particularly for the services that are funded fully by the state, as opposed to Medicaid, which will continue to flow. So at about this time next month, there'll be no check coming in, and we'll be having to go to our line of credit. Smaller agencies will have to go to a business loan at an interest rate of 5, 6, 7%. And smaller agencies may have to lay off staff. The bigger you are, the more you can sort of weather some of these storms. I heard a story in Armstrong that a small Head Start agency could not provide summer Head Start because they didn't get the check.
Explain how this might be different for small nonprofits and larger nonprofits.
If you're a single service kind of agency and you get all of your money from one source, when you have something like this come along, you're massively impacted. If you get money from multiple services, you have different kinds of funding flows with different kinds of schedules. And it's a little easier to weather the hard times.
And some of the smaller nonprofits simply don't have the cash reserve, and they're the ones who are jeopardized. The delay, the impasse continues, it's a possibility that some smaller programs would never be able to recover.
Why is the summer usually the most difficult time for providers of services like these in our state?
It's the beginning of the fiscal year, and contracts are developed by the counties because most of the money comes through the counties. And it takes a while for those county contracts to get established, signed off on, and there's various approvals that have to go through county government. So typically, it's our driest time. I refer to it as the desert, and quite often we won't have monies flowing until October. So I always have to say no big spending until October because all the funding doesn't start and flow in an easy kind of way.
So that's even in a good year.
In a good year.
So with this, it makes it lot worse.
We could be into November. In 2002, we went into November with Governor Rendell's first year.
Describe what happened then.
In 2002, the governor came in, and particularly for drug and alcohol, he was not a great supporter of drug and alcohol services, and they were the hardest hit, and there were some drug and alcohol programs that just went out of business.
So there are people that are adversely affected by this, and you know, who are the most vulnerable in a situation like this?
People that are getting the mental health services, people getting drug and alcohol services, ones where there's a lot of stigma to, and not everyone in the population has strong support for those services, as contrasted with education, which everybody pretty much supports.
Housing services, also, we had an individual talk to us earlier this morning, and pointed out quite clearly what happens, that they simply can't provide what they used to, ends up with people being homeless, which leads to the inefficiency issue. Again, in the summer, when you get to the end of the fiscal year and there's no promise of something coming, you can create even worse human services burdens on the taxpayer. And I learned that Stephen, the organization, had to take out a loan after the 2010 deficit. And there are a number of other organizations did the same thing, and they're still paying interest on that simply because the state didn't have the budget done on time. And so that's money that's going to pay interest to banks instead of going to the services, to people who need those services.
And, you know, a lot of people might not understand how somebody ends up homeless as a result of this. What happens?
Well, if you are in an apartment and that agency can no longer support that, you don't have a place to live. And so then you're homeless. When there's a crisis that needs to be resolved, you go to the emergency room. You might end up in jail. And those costs are still paid for by the public, but they're sort of invisible. And so we pay in the long run.
And they're higher costs.
They're higher costs. So the whole system's hydraulic. You push down here, it comes up over here.
What are you hearing from people right now?
I think everyone is worried. I mean, because the impact is not today, but they know they've lived through this two or three times. So they're saying, oh, I know that come September, I know come October, it's going to be a problem again.
I think what's important, too, is it's not just the budget impasse. This is historical, that human services and the infrastructure of the people who work there has been eroding for decades. When budgets are bad, when revenue is state revenue is down, it's human services that suffers the most. But even when revenues are good, it's probably the last place where there is help, and that is basically
why is that?
Well, it's because I we could spend a whole show just on that, but if you want to spend money to fix a bridge or a road. That's very popular because it fits nice in campaign brochures and legislative newsletters and grip and grin photos in the newspaper. But if you want to help prevent kids from being abused, if you want to help elder folks, if you want to help people with problems and different types of disabilities, that is something that's ongoing. You don't immediately see that kind of aid. If a legislator can accrue a grant to help restore infrastructure in their district, boy, that's a big deal. But if more funding would come in to help the homeless, that doesn't accrue to just very easily to one legislator. It usually affects everybody statewide, and that's why legislators care more about other issues that are much more dramatic. And they also assume that all these good people, the kind of people we were just in a room with, Steve, they just work harder, maybe with less resources. Maybe they can't keep the staff and the continuity and expertise of staff because they just can't pay them anymore. Wages have been stagnant even when times were good. And so the quality of their service might suffer, but they still work hard. And it doesn't hurt anybody politically.
And it seems to go against the idea or the saying, and I'm not sure who said it, but that a society is judged by how it takes care of its poorest members.
Hubert Humphrey
said that, which makes sense. He has a whole school of public policy named after him at the University of Minnesota. But, I mean, doesn't anybody take that to heart anymore?
Well, I think we are the victims of short-term thinking. Again, if there's some immediate problem with a manufacturing industry or some large employer, everybody rushes to take care of that. But whenever you try to put more funding to shore up the programs that Steve is representing, you don't see the benefit of that. If you would put more money into this is a federal program called WIC to help poor pregnant women get adequate nutrition so their kids are born healthier with instead of low birth weight, you can save the taxpayer so much money and reduce health care costs, reduce education, juvenile justice, criminal, all kinds of costs. But if you're thinking only about the next election in the legislature, they run every 2 years, you don't see the benefits of that. Maybe for 5, 10 or more years. And what we need are elected officials who have the simple courage to think about more than the next election, to think about the long-term best interest of all of us. Even if they don't want to make it a moral consideration, just in terms of cost effectiveness and the long-range saving to the taxpayer, they need to make those decisions. But again, they're afraid that if they would vote for maybe some increase that would really benefit their taxpayers 10 years from now, that's too long to wait. They got to run again next year. And so it's that we become prisoners of that short-term thinking.
A lot of our services also have a bit of stigma attached to them, drug and alcohol health. And folks don't really know about a service until sometimes they want to use it. But that doesn't happen all the time. And so it's out of sight, out of mind. And so they just assume it's wasteful. And so unfortunately, until people actually use the service, they often don't see the value of the service.
I think that fits into the short-term thinking, too. I mean, I remember working on attendant care legislation, which helps people with physical disabilities. And it was hard to get legislators or people to think about it in those terms. But the reality is that we are all temporarily abled, as I like to call it, whether it's through aging, whether it's through whatever, illnesses. We are all really temporarily abled, and we need to think about long-term care. Many of Steve's programs help the elderly. Hopefully, we get to that point where we need that kind
Absolutely.
Of program.
Right.
But again, we become prisoners of the short-term thinking.
That's Alan Kukovich. He is a former state legislator. Also with us is Stephen Christian Michaels, president and CEO of Family Services of Western Pennsylvania. Here on Essential Pittsburgh, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at essspgh. We'd like to hear your opinion, your comments, your questions, and also if you're in a situation where you are dependent upon some of these social services, what are the thoughts that are going through your mind? What concerns do you have? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. So what recourse do you have here? Are you contacting the Capitol, the governor's office, and legislators to explain the situation?
I sent out 27 letters to legislators yesterday. The press conference yesterday was a method to try to get out to the general population, because quite often the legislators have to hear from their constituents to say, this is an important issue.
And is there a certain level of frustration that you're feeling because all of this delay could have been avoided? And I say that as a question. I'm assuming the thing there's a sense of urgency that could have been felt 3 weeks ago that now legislators are beginning to feel because, you know, the heat is on. Are you frustrated about possible procrastination here? And if you perceive it, I'll let you say that.
Well, it is. I mean, back at the 30th of June, it was like, okay, we have one more day. I actually wrote my first press release at that point with the idea of let's have a state budget that comes through on time. Having gone through this twice before, I really don't want to do it again. And so there does seem to be this game of chicken between the two sides here. And in the meantime, I've got clients and I've got staff. I have three payrolls in the month of July. I'm just so tired of having to struggle whenever we have these political impasses.
There is a distinction with this impasse, too, I think. In the past, some of the longer impasses that have occurred have almost always been about revenue shortfall and a deficit that needs to be made up. And so the struggle is, where do you get the votes to get the kinds of revenue to deal with that? And it would be difficult. But it's much more doable to try to put together a package for basically addressing the $1.3 billion deficit that we have. But Governor Wolf is trying to do more than that. I mean, he's trying to say, let's change the way we fund education to make it more equitable. Let's improve the way we get revenues from our natural resources to make sure that the state gets a fairer share of that. So you're talking about policy differences, too. And as Steve said earlier, we don't want to be in a situation where we make this great effort and all we get is the same budget we had last year, because a year from now, those structural problems and that eroding infrastructure of human services just continues to get worse. So that makes it even harder, I think, to make the tough decisions right now to get this done. The legislature, as we said, left until August 25th. I did get a call from the governor's local district office this morning, and over the weekend, actually, the governor met, set up a meeting today with a number of statewide and regional human services groups, and the governor's office told me that the governor intends to work every day between now and August 25th to not only try to find a negotiated settlement, but also within the purview of what he can do administratively to help human services. But even and the other distinction is typically there are five entities in a room that decide the budget. Obviously, the governor through his budget secretary and the four caucuses. It's very unique that a governor in his first term not only has both caucuses controlled by the other party, but by such large numbers. So in essence, there are only really three parties in the room: the governor's team and the Republican caucus team in the House and Republican caucus team in the Senate. And the legislative Democrats don't have a whole lot of influence there, which in some ways makes it look more partisan and makes it tougher.
And, you know, Alan Kukovich, you've, as a former legislator, you've been on the inside and you're giving us kind of a view from the inside right here now. As far as why, okay, you're mentioning that there are policy differences at play here that are, you know, creating the situation that we're seeing. But, you know, could the whole last, what seemed like a last minute negotiation have been backed up a few weeks? I mean, when the legislature, which is controlled by the Republican Party, submits a budget that they know the governor, that's sort of the starting point of negotiation. You always ask for more than you think you're going to get. So when they submit this budget that they know the governor's going to veto because it doesn't even meet him halfway on any of his proposals, why wasn't that done June 1st instead of June 30th? You know, why was it done at the last minute, leading to what we know is going to be a veto, what we know is going to be a delay, which is 3 weeks and counting?
Paul, how dare you ask me a rational question about the legislative intent? This is historical in this state. It happens a lot. It's a sort of a semi-adult game of chicken, and many legislators know that whenever this happens, it's the governor that gets blamed. The headlines are legislature and Governor Wolf can't agree. They're not mentioning legislators' names. And legislators know, especially the leaders who've been there a long time, that governors will come and go, and they can score political points. So it's the problem is that it does become too much of a game, and it should be more about people's lives and about public policy and what's the best way to proceed. I think there are legislative leaders who are more concerned about the constituency that elected them to leaders than the constituency that elected them to office.
So, you know, as long as we're talking about the way the game is played here, so I'm just trying to understand, as along with others, I'm sure, listening in, as to how it works. So the Republicans make their drop-dead proposal. The governor vetoes it. And then they don't talk for a while, and now apparently they're talking again. So, was this all predictable? Could we, someone like you who's been there, could you just see this coming?
Yes, and I think a lot of people there saw it coming. The conventional wisdom in Harrisburg right now seems best case scenario might be early September. But many people think it could be October. I mean, let's just assume that the Republican leaders come to an agreement with Governor Wolf about the nature of the revenues, what the budget would look like. It's not just a budget bill. There are about 20 other bills that accompany that as part of a package, whether they're revenue bills or other bills have been promised in the process. They come back on August 25th, even though there's an agreement between the two Republican caucus leaders and the governor, you still need 26 votes in the Senate and 102 in the House. So on August 25th, that process begins. And I would suggest that there are a pool of legislators who will just never vote for any budget or any package. So you're starting with a smaller number. There may be some Democratic members who think the governor's given in too much. We need to do more. We are going to be back here next year. And they might, as a matter of conscience, withhold a vote. So piecing that package together logistically takes time. The Republican House, to their credit, did move a piece of legislation, I believe, late yesterday that can serve as a vehicle so they could amend the budget into it. So when there is an agreement, they can move a little more quickly, not be delayed by the process. But even that being said, the practicality of trying to piece the votes together for that can be very time consuming.
And that's rather demoralizing if you say, all right, well, if it's the middle of September, that means I'm not going to get paid to the middle of October or maybe even the middle of November. There are some agencies will just not have the cash flow for that. And I'll have it. We actually went and increased our line of credit so that we would have enough money to weather this. But then it's going to be how long is it going to take to pay that back?
So Family Services will be able to help some groups. But again, they're just building up debt. The Forbes Fund, we were informed, has put together some funding and a line of credit for organizations. At least 20 in this immediate area have applied for it. But once again, it is really an inefficient use of funds and should be a last resort.
And there's still interest that has to be paid.
That's right.
And you may have answered this already, but one of my questions was going to be, what happens if this budget delay continues, you know, beyond August into the fall? It sounds like it's going to be a very dire situation for social service agencies in Western Pennsylvania.
I mean, even the schools, you're talking September, students are coming back. There were some bills that were saying, well, let's have a temporary way of paying people in the time before the budget gets approved. But that bill has not gotten legs yet. So, yes, again, I think there will be some people that will not get services. There will be some staff that get laid off, probably in smaller agencies. But we have a lot of smaller agencies in the Western Pennsylvania area.
And between now and then, Stephen Christian Michaels, what are some of the hard decisions that you're going to have to make?
We're every day deciding, do we take some more money off our line of credit, or do we, you know, it's just a day-to-day with managing the cash. My CFO, that's what keeps him up at night.
And Alan Kukovich, do you envision a time when we might? I mean, I can remember these big budget battles going on when I was younger, first starting to follow the legislature, and that was in the 70s, I'm afraid. So this has been going on for a long time. Do you envision a day when we're finally going to get past this?
Well, I'll be optimistic because I sound kind of depressing here today.
Well, no, you're a realist, and people need to tell it like it is.
I think the takeaway from the event that Stephen sponsored today is that, and part of the message was for the providers in particular, that they no longer have the luxury of just doing a good job and helping people that they care about. That they do have to be political, and I mean that in a very nonpartisan way, political in terms of understanding the system and making sure the general public is aware of what happens in their community when these budget impasses happen. And it's not just, I mean, I could stand here or sit here, rather, make a big moral argument about how individuals who are the most vulnerable need assistance. But there's also an economic element to this. And if you take a look at a significant part of our economy, and not just through the nonprofits, but every county in this state gets more than half of their budget is for human services programs to prevent child abuse and to help with the DNA, the MHMR, the kind of programs Stephen's been talking about. And all the contracts and employees and what that means to an economy of a community or a county, that's all adversely affected. And most people don't recognize that. And I don't think the legislators will act more responsibly until there is more pressure put on them from the people who are aware of that in their district.
In most of the areas that we serve after the school district, we are the largest employer.
It's a dire situation, or certainly quickly becoming one, and hopefully it will be resolved sooner rather than later, talking about the budget stalemate and how it impacts social service agencies here in Western Pennsylvania and the people they serve. We've been talking with Stephen Christian Michaels, President and CEO of Family Services of Western Pennsylvania, and former state legislator Alan Kukovich. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Coming up, a state senator discusses a compromise to solve the budget crisis. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.